Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Identified the next opponent. And let's be completely honest. 49ers and Cowboys for the right to appear in the NFC title game. Ray, doesn't get much bigger than that. Postseason history for either of these teams, it can't get much bigger than that in terms of games a network would like to see scheduled. It's a fantastic, fantastic development from last night, Monday Night Football. Here come the Cowboys. Let's do it. This is what the kids like to call a very interesting and good matchup.
Well, it's a much better matchup than Tampa Bay would have been, as we saw. Tom Brady throwing 66 passes is a statement of how weak that team actually is, because that's insane. You don't win throwing 66 passes. He ends up this year throwing 799, a year after he threw 810, at the age of 45. And even though he can do it, the fact that they needed him to do it just to scrape by is an indication of how bad Tampa is. So the 49ers get a better opponent by a fair margin.
Here comes a problem. I mean, if the team that beat Tampa Bay is the exact same Dallas Cowboys team that shows up at Levi's Stadium on Sunday afternoon, the 49ers are going to have a little bit of a problem. But I also, down to my bone marrow, believe that the 49ers are not going to let the Dallas Cowboys play the same game that they played last night in Tampa. And just to put a little bit on the Brady topic that everyone is talking about today, and we'll have more on this a little bit later, but as Ralph Barbieri once so famously said, two things can be equally true. Has Tom Brady reached the looks a little older phase of his career? There is no doubt about it. That is true. But anyone saying that this guy, at 45 years old even, is completely washed up is out of their minds. You're going to see arm fatigue on any quarterback throwing 66 times in a game, and as you said, over 1,600 times in the last 2 years. I mean, there is no major league franchise that would allow a starting pitcher to get a workload like that. And the fact that Tom Brady was put on a team, or, you know, hey, he chose his own destiny when he chose Tampa Bay. But the way things broke down around him are the reason that the season didn't go as far as a lot of people thought it could. When I'm talking about the things breaking down around Tom Brady, I also mean his own marriage. I think he is on an opening day roster next season. And we're going to talk about what some possible landing spots could be for him. But look, here's what's not going to happen when the Dallas Cowboys get here. I don't think you're going to see Dak for throwing for, you know, just 300-ish yards with five total touchdowns against the 49ers defense. I don't think you're going to see CeeDee Lamb running all over God's green earth. I don't think it's going to be an awful lot of hey, diddle, diddle, Dalton Schultz right down the middle. Pollard and Zeke going for a buck 25 combined, playing penalty-free, basically turnover-free football. Like, if that's the Dallas Cowboys team that comes here, then hell yeah. I mean, they could absolutely win that game. They've got skill. The 49ers have the right skill to slow that down. And that's what makes it a fantastic matchup. Say it with me, Ray. This is a fantastic matchup.
It's a good matchup. It may not be... it's got to be a fantastic matchup after the game. Then I can tell you how good it is.
Deep insight.
Well, no, I mean...
You need a good game to actually say that was a good game?
Yes.
Okay.
Because, let's face it...
Things can go wrong.
Yeah. I mean, last night people thought that might be a pretty interesting game. The game was awful. Except for one thing. Brett Maher. That's the only thing that made it memorable. And other than that, this was a beatdown of frightening proportions. I mean, the fact that Tampa scored twice is a testament to Dallas's saying, you know what? Let's not get anybody hurt. Let's just, you know, if they score, score. We don't have to pitch shutout. All we have to do is win. Because Tampa was hideously outmatched, and they played it the entire way.
Not that past performance guarantees future outcomes, but that is exactly what you're looking for another team's field goal kicker, point after touchdown kicker, right before you're about to host that team in an NFC title game. That was bad. That was bad last night, missing four straight point after touchdowns. Has that ever happened?
No.
In a regular season or postseason game?
Never. It's happened nine times where a guy's missed three, and most of those were blocks, including a game with the sainted Tom Dempsey, who you may remember.
Yes.
Who had a club foot and went 5 for 8 in a game that the Saints won about 1 billion to 10. But that three is the most ever, and I don't think anybody's ever missed three outright, except for a guy with the Bills in 1960 who was also their punter and one of their cornerbacks.
You got to like a starting corner also being your kicker as well. I mean, you talk about how change in sports.
Them's were the old days.
Sure were.
But no, this was the first couple, you know, happens. The third one, you could tell he was thinking about it. And the fourth one, it looked like he'd put it away, just sort of out of his mind, and then still managed to doink it. So the fact that they gave him a fifth shot, A, speaks to the fact that they don't have another kicker, and B, that he's a pretty good kicker under normal circumstances.
But anyone can have a bad day at the office, right? I think that's the way you want to sell it to him. If you're the Dallas Cowboys, you don't really have time, and it's not very standard operating procedure to look to add a new kicker while you're in the middle of a postseason run. But didn't Dallas use another couple of kickers this year?
No.
I think
Maher went the whole year.
Well, he certainly had a rough one last night. It was a great night for punters. I know that that's not going to be a big talking point a lot of people want to hear, but that was actually a game where both punters were airing out some huge kicks and planting offenses inside the 20s. When that happened to the Cowboys, they could respond because they had a great night of offense from one of Dak Prescott's best games as a quarterback, regular season, post in his career. I mean, that was an outstanding game from Dak Prescott. It was a less than outstanding game from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but Tom Brady, I'm going to tell you, he was still among the least of their problems. He's not the reason why they're done playing football this year. The team around him is the reason that they're done playing football this year. And the football that we're going to play this weekend sounds awfully good to me. On Saturday, to open up the divisional weekend, we've got the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Kansas City Chiefs. A puncher's chance? Maybe. A miracle? Yeah, it would be billed as such. We've never seen Patrick Mahomes take a loss in the divisional round. Here he is again. Giants and Eagles? Come on. That should be a really good Saturday night game. And the best part of all of this is, kids, is if the New York Giants upset the Eagles, the price of poker then goes up even more for the San Francisco 49ers on Sunday, because it's not just an opportunity to put yourself into the NFC title game. It's an opportunity to host the NFC title game if the Giants can shock the Eagles. And I don't even know if a win for the Giants could even be rightfully billed as shocking, because that's a division opponent. And for the 49ers to reach the Super Bowl, they basically have to take out all remaining NFC East opponents to see who they would eventually meet. If they can win two games against the NFC East, they are in the Super Bowl. So it's really quite a development. Because it's the Dallas Cowboys, we're going to go to a man whose name is synonymous with Dallas sports. Tim Cowlishaw is going to be joining us. Ray and him used to, swap paint down at the Merck when you were both, Cub writers and adorable in your early careers?
No, we covered the Giants together. I was at the Cron, he was at the Merck.
Oh, so you did swap paint. Competitors.
Yeah, we were vicious.
Did you, rip letters off of his type? I'm guessing you guys were using typewriters back then?
No, something called a Telegram, which was a very distant sort of version of the laptop. Except right. it was like the first word processor. Yeah, essentially. No, mostly what we did was drink beer together.
Well, good.
Because you didn't really compete. You wouldn't tell anybody if you had something really good. But by and large, in 162 games, there isn't a ton of competition that gets done.
Well, maybe we'll get a couple of war stories out of you and Tim Cowlishaw coming up at 4:15 today. When we come on back, I want to ask you, when I say 49ers and Cowboys in the postseason, what's the first thing you think of? And I even want to open that up to the audience. When I say 49ers and Cowboys postseason football, what is the first thing you think of as a 49ers fan? We're going to have Michael Irvin join us tomorrow. That should be a hell of an interview. He's in the air right now. It's why he's not normally joining us on a Tuesday. So that's coming up tomorrow with Michael Irvin. We got Tim Cowlishaw today. What do you think of? Because it doesn't get much bigger, man, than 49ers Cowboys in the postseason in the NFC. 888-957-9570. It's good to have you here today. All of our guests officially appear on the Bud Light guest line, and we are brought to you by calhope.org.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast. Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
Well, in about an hour from now, we're going to have Tim Cowlishaw come on by and talk about 49ers and Cowboys coming up on Sunday. He is Mr. All Things Sports Dallas. So we're looking forward to that conversation. Looking forward to talking to you today. Tomorrow we're going to have Michael Irvin on. We got a little Warriors basketball to talk a little later on today. They were at the White House this afternoon. Got the president talking about the Warriors. You got Steph Curry up there. The senator. Boy, he's good. Steph Curry, one of the things I want to ask Steve Kerr about is, you know, you've watched Steph Curry develop as a player into one of the great galactic forces we've ever seen in the NBA. You've also watched him grow as an ambassador, as a guy who gets up in front of a podium, in front of assembled media, with maybe even a president sharing the dais, and just lets her rip. It's all so smooth for him. He makes everything look easy. He really does. The senator. Senator Curry.
You call somebody a senator these days, you're spoiling for a fight.
Well, yeah, I mean,
ambassador, maybe.
Diplomat.
Give him something in the Caribbean.
Diplomatic.
Where he doesn't have to worry about any sort of life crisis and just sits drinking piña coladas by a pool.
I guess what I'm saying is he could do it, man.
He's
such a good representative.
But it's just, you know, politicians, and they're now creepier than they've ever been. He should have higher aspirations.
Look at it this way.
Golf bum.
If he decided to show up as a senator, Mr. Curry goes to Washington, cleans it all up. Like Mr. Smith went to Washington to clean it all up, to put some backbone back into good old-fashioned elbow grease, working hard for the people, American politics.
Nah, he'd end up sitting next to Patrick Beverly.
Patrick Beverly?
I mean, if you want to extend this thing out, I think there are more senators like Patrick Beverly than there are like Stephen Curry.
Probably. I think Pat Bev is decent enough to where you're sort of sullying his good name by putting him with that.
Oh, no, I certainly am, but he still strikes me as a more talk than walk guy, which is your standard.
Oh, that's part of the whole package these days.
Well, then.
We're going to talk some 49ers and Cowboys memory. A little little memory lane here in just a second. But we do have the official first lamb to leave the 49ers flock this offseason. Not that the 49ers are in their offseason, but Diana Russini is one of many, along with Jeff Darlington, reporting that the Tennessee Titans have hired 49ers Director of Pro Personnel Rand Carthon as their new general manager. So he is the first branch off this front office, which has had an incredibly successful run with some of the decisions that they've made, not only on draft day, but in free agency as well. And Rand Carthon is the first to get a big promotion out of the success of the last couple of seasons here working in the 49ers office. He is the next general manager of the Tennessee Titans. Rand, Ray, what is your favorite Rand Carthon memory or moment?
The fact that he took the job with the Titans today. That is also my only memory of him.
Yeah, we don't know much.
Yeah, no, he worked under Adam Peters, but clearly he knows his stuff, otherwise he wouldn't be in the room. And Tennessee is not such a bad operation that he would have to, you know, shovel out the stables for 3 years to even get a running start, or that it's operated poorly in the past. It's been a pretty representative team. So he doesn't have a full rebuild to start off with. He probably has to find a quarterback.
I think he's got a good head coach in Vrabel. I know that they've sort of cleaned out the stalls around him. A few coaches are coming in and out of the Tennessee organization. But Vrabel stays, and he's good.
Yeah, I mean, they have to figure out a way to diversify their offense.
Right, it can't be just Derrick Henry over and over and over and over.
And the defense is okay, but if you can't win that division, you have more trouble than you have strength. So he's got some work to do.
When I say 49ers Cowboys, when I say 49ers Cowboys in the postseason, what is the first thing that you think of? This is Charles in San Jose. And before I open up Ray in his memory lane, Charles, I wanted to hit you first so Ray can't steal any thunder from you. What is the first thing you think of when you hear 49ers Cowboys postseason?
All right, growing up a Niners fan in the 90s, the one that terrifies me and gives me trauma is hearing Jimmy Johnson say, "How about them Cowboys?" and watching Charles Haley destroy our quarterback. And always knowing that this was the Super Bowl, the conference championship was the Super Bowl in the 90s with the Cowboys and Niners. But yeah, "How about them Cowboys" still haunts me. I do not want to hear that again. It still, to this day, gives me shivers because I wasn't around for the catch. That's what I grew up with, and yeah. I really want to get to the Cowboys this weekend. But yeah, how about them Cowboys? Give me chills.
I appreciate the honesty, Charles. I figured people would be calling in wanting to go right to directly good memories. But we remember the sports bitter more than we remember the sports sweet. And that it was a hugely bitter moment. There was a loss in the NFC title game at Candlestick. And you had Jimmy Johnson in that away locker room with the bad tiled, you know, I mean, there was nothing special to an away locker room back then. It wasn't romantic. It wasn't pretty. It was like a caged locker, especially a Candlestick. It was just an ugly, ugly room compared to the modern facilities and amenities. And it's him standing basically on a card table in the middle of this completely white, unimpressive locker room with the same tiling that is above us here in this studio, basically saying something that It probably didn't sound memorable coming out of his own mouth. It is the signature. It is as attached to the Dallas Cowboys as, you know, as any Raiderism, "just win, baby," was ever attached to the Raiders. "How about them Cowboys" is still alive 30 years after it happening.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah! Ugh. Ray, what's your go-to Dallas Cowboy 49er playoff memory?
Oh, it's Preston Riley. It's the moment that this became a rivalry that transcends time. When the 49ers had a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter of the 72 conference championship against the Cowboys. If they win, they'd play the Raiders in the Super Bowl. Instead, the Cowboys get a field goal, they get a touchdown, they cut it to 5. They kick an onside kick. Preston Riley was a wide receiver on the hands team. Fumbled the onside kick. The Cowboys recover, march down the field, score. They go to the Super Bowl and they win.
30-28, Cowboys winning at Candlestick, 1972 playoffs, the NFC Divisional playoffs, the first meeting at Candlestick Park. The 49ers, again, gave up a 21-3 lead in that game, and were up 28-13 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they and that was the third year in a row they had played the Cowboys, and they lost each time. And they needed to get one, and the fact that they couldn't get that one and the way they lost it, that stuck with people well into the 80s and 90s. And even the 81 game didn't fully wash that away, because the Cowboys were all of a sudden, of all the teams in the NFL, the team that 49er fans learned to hate most and loudest. More than the Rams, more than the Giants, more than anybody.
Well, that's saying something, right? I mean, that is significantly saying something between two teams that officially have history and great fans and trophy cases that other NFL teams would be envious of. The fact that if you really wanted to boil it down, who is the single biggest rivalry in the history of the 49ers? I mean, the Seahawks very much lived up to that role for a while. The Rams, for a moment there, lived up to that role because you got to play the L.A., Southern California versus Northern California geographical tie-in, too. But the truth is, it's probably 49ers Cowboys.
Yeah, this is the
Packers also entered the conversation with Brett Favre.
But this goes back 50 years. Favre doesn't. Seahawks don't. This is the one that keeps cropping up, even though they haven't played each other in a playoff game since, I think, 94.
They played last year.
I'm sorry, you're right, last year. Other than that one, before that, you go back to 94, I think. And the truth is, those games still stick for reasons that you wouldn't think they would, because they don't play that often. But every game represented either, you know, an enormous triumph or devastating heartbreak in San Francisco.
Cowboys lead the all-time series. This includes regular season by just one game. The all-time series is 19-18-1. The postseason series, Cowboys got a two-game lead. They're 5-3 all-time against the 49ers. With the 49ers winning that last meeting, 23-17 win in Dallas on the road to SoFi Stadium last year, where they obviously ran into the Rams at the NFC title game. But here we go. I mean, it's true football royalty when these two guys, when these two teams get together in the postseason. Two franchises combining for 10 Super Bowl wins. That's not bad. 15 NFC championships between the both of them. Cowboys got 8, and the 49ers got 7. That's significant. So the fact that these two teams meet again and the 49ers not only have a chance to beat the Cowboys on the way to the NFC title game, but if the New York Giants are able to shock Philadelphia, the 49ers beat, and you'll know, because the 49ers, they play the final game of the weekend, which means they're going to know, are we hosting an NFC championship game with a win or simply going to one in Philadelphia? They will know by the time this game kicks off on Sunday night. It should be very, very fun, man, because styles make fights, and these two teams got similar styles. I tell you, Dallas last night had a luxury afforded to them that the 49ers will not afford to them. The Cowboys last night basically spent the entire evening with two deep safeties saying, all right, we know you're going to throw. We know you're not going to run. So we're just going to try to take as much away in terms of big, deep plays from Tom Brady. And we're going to give up everything underneath, but nothing deep and up top. And so they played that, you know, what do you want to call it? A shell, two deep safeties, almost the entire game, which leaves an awfully light box up front. Tampa Bay Buccaneers did not even try to take advantage of a light box up front. You do that against the San Francisco 49ers, Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, and Elijah Mitchell are going to run for 220 yards on you. That's going to be how Dallas takes their last game plan and pretty much has to go about just crinkling it up, because that's not going to work against the 49ers.
No, the Tampa Bay abandoned its running game weeks ago.
Yeah, like week six.
And Leonard Fournette was supposed to be an impact guy for them. You saw last night how much impact he had. 5 carries, 11 yards. One pass catch for 6 yards. I mean, they didn't run. They didn't want to run, which is why Brady ends up throwing 66 passes and throws 799 for the year. They were a one-dimensional team with an average defense. They were 8-9 on merit, and they played like it last night. They got what they deserved, and they got it the way they deserved it.
It was a bad showing. I mean, it was a bad representative of what Tampa claims to be in the postseason.
Well, what they were 3 years ago. But, you know, since then, they've gotten materially worse every year until this year when, like I said, they did one thing and they just did it over and over again and not always well. And I think the people who are criticizing Brady are criticizing him because he didn't take this mess and turn it into a gourmet meal, when I would suggest to you that nobody could have.
Yeah, I don't know if a 35-year-old Tom Brady had enough in him to save. I mean, let me ask you, what exactly did he save? That, you know, that they were a playoff team. They won their division. Now, they didn't do it in a way that is cloaked in glory, but he did that. I mean, and he solely, exclusively did that. It wasn't his coach. It wasn't his teammates around him. It wasn't his defense. Tom Brady, by himself, with a little bit of Mike Evans, shows up every 3 weeks to really help me out. Won a division at the age of 45 by himself. I saw The Athletic today, right? Where does he go from here? He looked awful, feeble even. It was a sad sight for one of the most accomplished quarterbacks in NFL history. Oh, my God. What are you talking? Did we watch the same football game?
No, they're comparing Tom Brady to the idealized Tom Brady. And by that comparison, yeah, he looked old and worn out. But he looked old and worn out because he's been throwing the ball 50 times a game since week 4.
Again, washed. Because when you call someone washed, like, that word gets thrown around way too often. Because when you're saying someone's washed, you mean they got nothing left to give. One more cycle through, the entire t-shirt disintegrates in the dryer. Like, that's what you mean when you say washed. Boys and girls, friends of all ages who are just falling for, you know, media talking points exercised by, I'm guessing, headline writers who are in their late 20s, early 30s, and don't know enough about sports to respect what the hell it is they're seeing in Tom Brady. You know, I mean, I got to tell you, like, I was listening to the morning show this morning, too, and Bonte's like, I never want to hear another word out of Tom Brady. That guy's washed. What are you talking about? Washed in 351 passing yards don't walk hand in hand. Tom Brady threw for 350 last night. That's not washed. That's not washed. That is a one-man army, all things considered, being able to get it done on a ridiculous 66 attempts. The man's not washed. Let me tell you, Tom Brady to the Raiders makes an awful lot of sense. Now, does he adopt a fully functioning quality football franchise around him? No, he does not. But he's got more weaponry on that offense than most teams would go ahead and ever be able to offer him. Tom Brady, if he rolled into the Raiders next year, he's got an all-pro running back if they're lucky enough to re-sign Josh Jacobs. But if you know that Tom Brady's coming, you probably stick around for that if you're Josh Jacobs. He's got an all-pro wide receiver. He's got a real tight end. He's got an offensive line that actually exceeded expectations and could possibly get better, and he's got a coach that he has worked very, very well with. Tom Brady gets offered this. Hey, I don't know if you're going to get much help from the ownership suite. I don't know if the defense is going to help you win many games here, Tom. Certainly didn't help Derek Carr win many games, but here's what you do get. You get 2 all-pros, and you got a head coach that will just basically say, you're in charge of the entire offense, because he and McDaniels obviously have worked together very, very well throughout their entire careers, and he gets handed the reins to a team that had a wildly talented offense. Tom Brady to the Raiders makes an awful lot of sense. Does it put him right into the playoffs because everything is great? No, but there is no everything is great situation. The only thing Tom can really ask for is make the players around me great, and we will try to put up 40 every single week. That's all he can really ask for. There is no team that is going to be totally built, ready to go, looking for a quarterback.
We just mentioned one that might fit the bill, though.
Tennessee?
Yeah. I think that's a doable thing. I mean, you do have to do a little fixing, but they have a decent offensive line. They've got a guy who can carry the ball enough times so that Tom Brady does not have to throw the ball 66 times. And their defense is passable. They don't have a great quarterback. And how they deteriorated this year is, I don't know enough about the inner workings of the Titans to be able to say. But I think he's an upgrade from Tannehill. He's certainly an upgrade from Malik Willis or Joshua Dobbs. I think that's a place where he could go and become a playoff team again. Because I'm not sure that anybody can make the Raiders a playoff team. I think they have ruined so many things about their organization that even when they get Josh Jacobs and Devontae Adams and a passable quarterback in Derek Carr, they still end up 6-11 and looking bad doing it. I mean, I think they might be beyond help, especially for him. I mean, I think, well, you know, he doesn't really need the payday because he's still got $375 million waiting for him in television. I think he wants to be on a good team one more time.
Well,
and this wasn't it.
Mike Vrabel, he and Tom Brady, they got connection too, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he has options. I don't know how many there are, and I think he'd probably have to take a bit of a salary haircut. But if he wants to get in the postseason one more time,
it was going to be 46. You've got to take a little haircut. That's the way that goes. I mean, if we're going to invest in you at this right, because it does officially feel like the wrong time to be getting into the Tom Brady business, but it's also a great stopgap for a team or two that is, you know, not going to find the quarterback that they think is going to be their future franchise quarterback at the top of this draft or anywhere else. Tom Brady is a very good stopgap. And again, he completed 67% of his passes on an absurd, 730 passes, however many he attempted this year.
733 in the regular season.
733
passes. The most ever in one season.
It's insane.
Yes. That's why I think Tennessee would work. Because even though they're probably going to draft a quarterback at some point, it won't be a quarterback that's going to threaten Brady.
His 25 touchdown passes, obviously down. But he had back-to-back 40-plus touchdown passes in Tampa before he got to this year. And this year, still single-digit interception number. He had 9. That's as close as you can get to double digits without getting there, obviously. But he does not have this crippling lack of arm strength or inability to get the ball out on time. He's still got one of the fastest pop times in the entire sport. Nobody gets the ball out faster than Brady, except for Jimmy Garoppolo and Patrick Mahomes at times this year. I wonder where Brock is standing through his small sample size of games in that regard right now. Probably far back of both of them, because Brock Purdy can buy time with his legs, and we've watched him buy enough time to know that he doesn't have an under 3 second pop time. It'd be mathematically impossible. Like, you start running 8 to 12 second plays because you're buying time with your legs, you're not going to be in that realm anymore.
No, I mean, getting back to Brady, I think the Raiders are, I don't know, it feels like one last lost season with a pathetic team. And until the Raiders fix what truly ails them, which is a mediocre offensive line and a terrible defense, anybody in that situation is going to struggle. Josh Jacobs struggled. Even with Max Crosby on the other side, who's an elite player, the rest of that defense is shambolic.
It's bad. I mean, to say that Josh Jacobs struggled is absurd.
No. I mean, I struggled to make that team a dynamic team where you could go, they're going to win because of him. He had really good games that they lost.
Right. Well,
that's what I meant to say, and I didn't say it well enough.
Right. Yeah, I was wondering, because he was first-team All-Pro. He was fantastic.
No. He was sensational. But if you have a first-team All-Pro as your running back,
you should win
six games, and you don't have a top-10 offense, What are you doing?
Well, and you also have a first-team All-Pro wide receiver. I mean, that's the thing. If you're Brady at this point, sure, you're looking for one more big bite of a playoff apple. But at the same time, if you can't find that the entire way through, how would you like to add yourself to an offense that you think you would plug and play well into and have function well around you, along with having a head coach that will just basically hand you the playbook and say, Tom, I trust you to do it all? And he would have that. He might have that in Tennessee, too. It's going to be fascinating. But I don't think that Tom Brady is done playing football. He certainly doesn't have, you know, that more time with my wife, who I promised to spend more time with, wife in his life anymore. By the way, have you seen Tom Brady's alleged girlfriend?
I have not.
He's doing all right, Ray. He's doing just fine. If you like 25-year-old Slovakian models, he's doing okay.
I wasn't worried about his situation romantically. But he goes to a team that, and this was probably their best defense in a while, that ranked 27th overall, 23rd against the run, 27th against the pass. I don't know that Tom Brady can generate 35 points a game just to break even.
It's a big ask. There's no doubt. It's a big ask. We've got an awful lot to ask Tim Kalishaw about the Dallas Cowboys when he joins us in a little more than a half an hour from right now. When we come on back, a few more of your calls. And seriously, a round of applause for the 49ers front office that they have officially deserved. We're going to come on back with that here on 95.7 The Game. It's Damon and Ratto. We are brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
The road to Glendale is brought to you by Merriwest Credit Union, working for you today, tomorrow, together. Damon Bruce and Ray Ratto working for you together today. And we're going to be on tomorrow as well. We were on yesterday. We're also on YouTube. You can find us there. Us together. You and me. Us.
I'm trying to hold down lunch here.
Us, Ray. It's a unit.
Yo, we're a unit, all right. I was reading up on Ron Carthen. He's been a player personnel director with the Rams and the 49ers the last 7 years. Replaces John Robinson, who was the general manager in Tennessee, got fired in the middle of the season.
For doing something either trade naughty or around the office naughty. It was weird.
No, he got into an argument with the owner.
Okay, well,
apparently there was nothing nefarious going on except that he talked back to the lady he shouldn't have talked back to.
Amy Strunk, is that her name?
Yes. She, daughter of, Bud Adams, who originally owned the team when he bought it in 1960 as the Oilers in Houston.
So, Ran Carthon actually has a little NFL pedigree. He, by the way, for those who are just tuning in, the first person among the 49ers success story that we're looking at this year has left the building to take another job. Ran Carthon is taking the, and it could be Ron, pardon me, but we know so little about him because the 49ers, you know, don't go to the microphone, who's not supposed to go to the microphone, but he was one of Adam Peters' right-hand guy. He is now the new general manager of the Tennessee Titans, so the first to leave the flock, if you will.
Yeah, his dad, Maurice Carthon, you may remember him from his years as a fullback terrorizing people with the New York Giants.
Yes.
So, he got in the door with nepotism, but I guess he's earned his way since then.
Look, nepotism opens the door for you in life.
In the NFL, it surely does.
It surely does. It's like that in Hollywood, too. I heard a lot of criticism about how there's so much nepotism in Hollywood.
It also works that way at USC.
It works that way in a lot of places, but the nice thing about Hollywood, in most cases, and sports in just about all cases, is even though nepotism will get you the job, it takes a certain level of performance to keep you there.
Unless you're the owner's kid, in which case you're there no matter what.
Unless you are born into the ownership suite. Yeah. Outside of that, if you're if anyone is responsible for evaluating your job, the beautiful thing about sports and show business is if you're not putting butts in seats in somehow, in some way, you're not going to have the job for very long.
Yeah, if you've been with, I think it's just, this is fifth team now, because he was a scout for the Falcons and somebody else before then. This will be his fifth NFL team, so
that's a lot of people hiring you.
Yeah, the door that opened, he put a wastebasket in it so that it didn't close.
There you go. So congratulations to him. I hope he is about to make a pile of money that Joan in payroll was not about to pay him as she was cutting the 49ers front office checks. But man, we got to talk about how good the 49ers front office has indeed been. Because the 49ers front office, year over year, when you look at it, has had some really good years and some really good drafts and made as many good decisions, if not officially now more than the bad decisions that any and all front offices make along the way of their string of good decisions. Nobody's perfect. Nobody hits 100 when it comes to selecting players or free agents that go ahead and fit like a glove. And you look at what the 49ers front office has done. I mean, Christian McCaffrey might go down as the single most impactful midseason trade in the history of Bay Area sports, depending on where this year goes. If it doesn't go any further than this Sunday, he is still, by any measure, one of the most season-altering trades in the history of Bay Area in-season-altering trades. Before this year began, the big acquisition was free agent cornerback Javarius Ward. Now, he didn't play particularly well last week, but boy, he has been a huge part of this entire year's success story for that defense. You got Greg Odom, who anybody could have gone out and signed. He was a safety that led the NFL in special teams tackles more than he actually played the role of safety out in, you know, your starting defense. He ended up second team all pro. They signed Ray McCloud because special teams has been a problem. He ends up with the second most punt return yards and has popped some of the bigger, more memorable plays of the regular season. He has not been a voluminous player for the 49ers, but man, what little we've seen of him, he's made huge impact. Remember, they had a fourth-round pick in Spencer Burford, who started 16 games for them this year. We've gone this far into the conversation without even bringing up Brock Purdy, because that's pretty much on the front of everyone's mind. Look at that signing and how that has turned out, for goodness sakes. And then you look at all the other decisions that this front office has made, Ray. From Trent Williams to Nick Bosa to Talanoa Hufanga to Fred Warner, to George Kittle. It's amazing how many big decisions they've made and how many big decisions they've made in the fifth round of NFL drafts recently that have paid off with all-pro production. I'm looking at you, George Kittle. I'm looking at you, Talanoa Hufanga. Deamador Lenore was a fifth rounder. Is he an all-pro? No, but he's a starter for this team. You know, Jalen Moore is a swing tackle that hopefully McGlinchey and Trent Williams stay healthy. But if they don't, Jalen Moore is going to step in there and probably do a commiserate job, which is quite a testament to how good he's been.
The thing that this all reminds me of is that anytime you make a mistake, you get enough cracks at it. You can paper that over in time if you know what you're doing in general. So you can make the Solomon Thomas pick, and it's not a disaster, just because not everybody hits. In fact, most guys don't hit. So if you can repair your mistakes of earlier drafts and free agent classes and end up with this, you know what you're doing.
Well, and look, everyone wants to keep on going back to the capital, draft capital that they gave up to acquire Trey Lance. That all comes out in the wash of does not matter if Brock Purdy really continues to play like he plays. Then just pretend the name Trey Lance was Brock Purdy's and everything is fine. Because as long as you have a starting quarterback that you believe in, it really doesn't matter how they got there.
You can always get more draft picks.
And you can always pick up more draft picks.
There's not an unlimited supply of them, but they're available. I mean, for a team gave up all their draft capital, they got 7 picks this coming year. Might get more. In fact, I think get a couple more because of Carthen.
Absolutely. They're going to get 2 compensatory picks.
So now they've got 9. You can do stuff with 9 picks.
You can do stuff
with
9 picks.
You just better be good at it.
Well, and the truth is we have seen this team now have more success in the middle and the back of the draft than it has really at the top. So, you know, that could be described as a problem, but ultimately that's a really good problem to have because you're going to have more picks round three through the end of the draft than you are in the first two rounds. That's just how that goes.
Yeah, I'm not sure what picks they get for the Carthen deal, but I think they had
a third round compensatory for sure.
Okay, so now they got three threes, two twos, or two fives, maybe a third. I mean, I don't know where the second pick goes to is what I'm saying, but they've got two fifths, three sevenths, and now they've got this other pick floating around. I'm not sure what it is, but they're fine.
And let's face it, some of the big bets that they've made, some of the big checks that they've agreed to have been players that have really, really panned out. I mean, they're going to make a huge commitment here to Nick Bosa going forward that is going to break the bank in every conceivable way, but that's going to be so much easier to absorb.
It's money they've already budgeted.
With a quarterback, but here's the thing. Not only is it money that they've already budgeted, Ray, but it's actually going to end up playing off as a surplus because I'm sure they also budgeted a $25 to $30 million quarterback room. No matter how that number gets whacked up, they're going to have a quarterback room that is going to cost them, if it's really only Purdy and Trey Lance, less than $10 million next year. I mean, that's incredible. That gives this team the ability to keep this well-built and constructed team around them. So it's massive flexibility. It's flexibility that, by the way, the Chargers are not about to have because Justin Herbert's about to turn around and say, you know what, I'm going to cost you $45 million. This, by the way, is the problem that the Baltimore Ravens are officially looking down the barrel of because they got a big decision to make on Lamar Jackson. Now, I would think that the evidence of everything that we just saw in that last playoff game forwards them to, at the very least, franchising Lamar Jackson. A guy here named Chris on the Otis Bird III Memorial chat line on our YouTube page says...
Wait a minute. Memorial?
No, not Memorial. Yeah, no. Otis Bird is doing well, but I'm saying that he is... It's a memorial to how consistent... It's a monument?
How about just...
Otis Bird III text line.
Very good.
We'll just go with that. The Otis Bird III text line has basically, you know, said when we were talking about Tom Brady going to the Raiders or the Tennessee Titans, either a Raider or Titans fan wrote in and said, I'd rather have Lamar, Damon. You know, I'd rather have Lamar too, but I don't think Lamar is hitting the market. At the very least, Baltimore is going to franchise him. Because what other options does Baltimore really have? Boy, Lamar... posted some.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
The road to Glendale is brought to you by Merriwest Credit Union, working for you today, tomorrow, together. Damon Bruce and Ray Ratto working for you together today. And we're going to be on tomorrow as well. We were on yesterday. We're also on YouTube. You can find us there. Us together. You and me. Us.
I'm trying to hold down lunch here.
Us, Ray. It's a unit.
Yo, we're a unit, all right. I was reading up on Ron Carthen. He's been a player personnel director with the Rams and the 49ers the last 7 years. Replaces John Robinson, who was the general manager in Tennessee. He got fired in the middle of the season.
For doing something either trade naughty or around the office naughty. It was weird.
No, he got into an argument with the owner.
Okay, well,
apparently there was nothing nefarious going on except that he talked back to the lady he shouldn't have talked back to.
Amy Strunk, is that her name?
Yes. She, daughter of, Bud Adams, who originally owned the team when he bought it in 1960 as the Oilers in Houston.
So... Ran Carthon actually has a little NFL pedigree. He, by the way, for those who are just tuning in, the first person among the 49ers success story that we're looking at this year has left the building to take another job. Ran Carthon is taking the, and it could be Ron, pardon me, but we know so little about him because the 49ers, you know, don't go to the microphone, who's not supposed to go to the microphone, but he was one of Adam Peters' right-hand guy. He is now the new general manager of the Tennessee Titans, so the first to leave the flock, if you will.
Yeah, his dad, Maurice Carthon, you may remember him from his years as a fullback terrorizing people with the New York Giants.
Yes.
So, he got in the door with nepotism, but I guess he's earned his way since then.
Look, nepotism opens the door for you in life.
In the NFL, it surely does.
It surely does. It's like that in Hollywood, too. I heard a lot of criticism about how there's so much nepotism in Hollywood.
It also works that way at USC.
It works that way in a lot of places, but the nice thing about Hollywood in most cases, and sports in just about all cases, is even though nepotism will get you the job, it takes a certain level of performance to keep you there.
Unless you're the owner's kid, in which case you're there no matter what.
Unless you are born into the ownership suite. Yeah. Outside of that, if you're if anyone is responsible for evaluating your job, the beautiful thing about sports and show business is if you're not putting butts in seats in somehow, in some way, you're not going to have the job for very long.
Yeah, if you've been with, I think this is fifth team now, because he was a scout for the Falcons and somebody else before then. This will be his fifth NFL team. So
that's a lot of people hiring you.
Yeah, the door that opened, he put a wastebasket in it so that it didn't close.
There you go. So congratulations to him. I hope he is about to make a pile of money that Joan in payroll was not about to pay him as she was cutting the 49ers front office checks. But man, we got to talk about how good the 49ers front office has indeed been. Because the 49ers front office, year over year, when you look at it, has had some really good years and some really good drafts and made as many good decisions, if not officially now more than the bad decisions that any and all front offices make along the way of their string of good decisions. Nobody's perfect. Nobody hits 100 when it comes to selecting players or free agents that go ahead and fit like a glove. And you look at what the 49ers front office has done. I mean, Christian McCaffrey might go down as the single most impactful midseason trade in the history of Bay Area sports, depending on where this year goes. If it doesn't go any further than this Sunday, he is still, by any measure, one of the most season-altering trades in the history of Bay Area in-season-altering trades. Before this year began, the big acquisition was free agent cornerback Javarius Ward. Now, he didn't play particularly well last week, but boy, he has been a huge part of this entire year's success story for that defense. You got Greg Odom, who anybody could have gone out and signed. He was a safety that led the NFL in special teams tackles more than he actually played the role of safety out in, you know, your starting defense. He ended up second team all pro. They signed Ray McCloud because special teams has been a problem. He ends up with the second most punt return yards and has popped some of the bigger, more memorable plays of the regular season. He has not been a voluminous player for the 49ers, but man, what little we've seen of him, he's made huge impact. Remember, they had a fourth-round pick in Spencer Burford, who started 16 games for them this year. We've gone this far into the conversation without even bringing up Brock Purdy, because that's pretty much on the front of everyone's mind. Look at that signing and how that has turned out, for goodness sakes. And then you look at all the other decisions that this front office has made, Ray. From Trent Williams to Nick Bosa to Talanoa Hufanga to Fred Warner, to George Kittle. It's amazing how many big decisions they've made and how many big decisions they've made in the fifth round of NFL drafts recently that have paid off with all-pro production. I'm looking at you, George Kittle. I'm looking at you, Talanoa Hufanga. Deamador Lenore was a fifth rounder. Is he an all-pro? No, but he's a starter for this team. You know, Jalen Moore is a swing tackle that hopefully McGlinchey and Trent Williams stay healthy. But if they don't, Jalen Moore is going to step in there and probably do a commiserate job, which is quite a testament to how good he's been.
The thing that this all reminds me of is that anytime you make a mistake, you get enough cracks at it, you can paper that over in time if you know what you're doing in general. So you can make the Solomon Thomas pick, and it's not a disaster. Just because not everybody hits. In fact, most guys don't hit. So if you can repair your mistakes of earlier drafts and free agent classes and end up with this, you know what you're doing.
Well, and look, everyone wants to keep on going back to the capital, draft capital that they gave up to acquire Trey Lance. That all comes out in the wash of does not matter if Brock Purdy really continues to play like he plays. Then just pretend the name Trey Lance was Brock Purdy's and everything is fine. Because as long as you have a starting quarterback that you believe in, it really doesn't matter how they got there.
You can always get more draft picks.
And you can always pick up more draft picks.
There's not an unlimited supply of them, but they're available. I mean, for a team gave up all their draft capital, they got 7 picks this coming year. Might get more. In fact, I think get a couple more because of Carthen.
Absolutely. They're going to get 2 compensatory picks.
So now they've got 9. You can do stuff with 9 picks.
You can do stuff
with
9 picks.
You just better be good at it.
Well, and the truth is we have seen this team now have more success in the middle and the back of the draft than it has really at the top. So, you know, that could be described as a problem, but ultimately, that's a really good problem to have because you're going to have more picks round 3 through the end of the draft than you are in the first 2 rounds. That's just how that goes.
Yeah, I'm not sure what picks they get for the Carthen deal, but I think they had
a 3rd round compensatory for sure.
Okay, so now they got 3 threes, 2 twos, or 2 fives, maybe a 3rd. I mean, I don't know where the 2nd pick goes to, is what I'm saying, but they've got 2 fifths, 3 sevenths, and now they've got this other pick floating around. I'm not sure what it is, but they're fine.
And let's face it, some of the big bets that they've made, some of the big checks that they've agreed to have been players that have really, really panned out. I mean, they're going to make a huge commitment here to Nick Bosa going forward that is going to break the bank in every conceivable way, but that's going to be so much easier to absorb.
It's money they've already budgeted.
With a quarterback, but here's the thing. Not only is it money that they've already budgeted, Ray, but it's actually going to end up playing off as a surplus because I'm sure they also budgeted a $25 to $30 million quarterback room. No matter how that number gets whacked up, they're going to have a quarterback room that is going to cost them, if it's really only Purdy and Trey Lance, less than $10 million next year. I mean, that's incredible. That gives this team the ability to keep this well-built and constructed team around them. So it's massive flexibility. It's flexibility that, by the way, the Chargers are not about to have because Justin Herbert's about to turn around and say, you know what? I'm going to cost you $45 million. This, by the way, is the problem that the Baltimore Ravens are officially looking down the barrel of because they got a big decision to make on Lamar Jackson. Now, I would think that the evidence of everything that we just saw in that last playoff game forwards them to, at the very least, franchising Lamar Jackson. A guy here named Chris on the Otis Bird III Memorial chat line on our YouTube page says...
Wait, no, wait a minute. Memorial?
Not Memorial. Yeah, no. Otis Bird is doing well, but I'm saying that he is... It's a memorial to how consistent... It's a monument?
How about just...
Otis Bird III text line.
Very good.
We'll just go with that. The Otis Bird III text line has basically, you know, said when we were talking about Tom Brady going to the Raiders or the Tennessee Titans, either a Raider or Titans fan wrote in and said, I'd rather have Lamar, Damon. You know, I'd rather have Lamar too, but I don't think Lamar is hitting the market. At the very least, Baltimore is going to franchise him. Because what other options does Baltimore really have? Boy, Lamar posted some... I mean, it does, in a way, feel like he has mentally divorced himself. Did you know that he didn't even bother traveling to Cincinnati? I mean, this is a guy who was far enough down the road from any injury where if he wanted to be with the team, he could have been with the team. He's also posted an incredibly cryptic thing on, you know, Instagram saying, you know, when you love something, you protect it. When something loves you back, you reward it. You know, like one of them really, you should have done better by me because I've always done right by you, sort of cryptic tweets.
Well, it doesn't help that he still doesn't have an agent. So I guess that's how he talks to the team now.
Yeah, he's working without an agent. or his mom, or I believe his dad is representing him, but it's his call, obviously. This is a guy who just finished his fifth year option. He can become an unrestricted free agent in March, but when you're looking at the Ravens, they at the very, very least have to franchise tag him or franchise tag him and then trade him, because you got to play it to me. Those are the two options that the Ravens really have in front of them. Franchise tag him or franchise tag him and trade him.
Yeah, franchise tagging is that's the minimum. You've got to be able to, A, create cap space for the quarterback you think you're going to get coming back, because it ain't going to be Tyler Huntley. It ain't going to be, can't even remember who their other quarterback is. But it's, you saw what they are without Lamar Jackson. In fact, you kind of see what they are with Lamar Jackson, which is a very groundbound team trying to get by with Mark Andrews. And
who's good. Very good.
But alone, not so much.
Yeah.
He needs help. And I don't think that roster gives it to him.
By the way, welcome, boys and girls, to your 4 o'clock hour.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.